This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Wondering if dangerous contaminants are in your home's water? Get Leaf Home Water Solutions today. We can't live without water, but we can take actions today to make it safer and healthier. Leaf Home Water Solutions is offering a free in-home water test. Just visit leafhome.com/water to schedule yours. With results from their advanced digital testing, Leaf Home Water Solutions can design a whole home system and expertly install it in as little as one day. With Leaf Home Water Solutions, you can feel confident that each drop of water from every tap and appliance is cleaner and safer for you and your family. We can't live without water, but we can take actions today to make our family's water safer with Leaf Home Water Solutions. Schedule your free home water test today at leafhome.com/water and save 15% on all home water treatment systems. That's leafhome.com/water for your free home water test and 15% off. leafhome.com/water.
So Mastin, please, if you would, share your story with us of how you got to be where you are in a very concise and well-rounded way.
Oh, wow. Well, first of all, I'm happy to be here with you today, Rosie, and having this conversation. Mm. It really lights me up to be able to hear about impact, and I do so much focus so much on sort of like creating content stuff like that, that it's really nice to just, that book to me is like so old, so when I think about it, I'm like, that's awesome, like it has a life of its own, which I think is so cool, even though it's only a couple years old, so that's awesome. Really grateful to be here, and I mean, if I had to summarize it, like if someone just meet me for the first time, if you're interested in living your purpose, if you're interested in trying to figure out why you were born, if you're in a place of being stuck and you want to kind of get unstuck, or you feel like something's holding you back and you're not sure what it was, that was me. I was in that exact same place. I didn't even know that I didn't know what my purpose was. I didn't even know that I had a purpose. Mm-hmm. And that, because of that, there's a lot of ill effects, addiction, codependent relationship, overconsumption of alcohol. I was in Los Angeles as a music manager and lived that lifestyle, and it was great and awesome, and it came crashing down early in my early 20s, and I started seeking answers, I think, like a lot of us do when there's pain, and I started reading personal development material that I had never really read before, and it made me think, like, where was this stuff earlier in my life, and so I started sharing it on social, and I'll date myself, I started sharing stuff back on, like, Friendster and MySpace. Talk about old school,
Stop it. Hey, we're like the same age, so we're not old. We're just experienced.
I'm just saying, like, I've had a love affair with personal development for a long time. And so, through that process, I realized I needed to leave my corporate job. And so I quit my corporate job and have had sort of entrepreneurial blunders for a while. And then that sort of, enough blunders kind of, you stick with it, turns into success. And I'm really blessed to have a great career now. And I primarily, I'm a coach and facilitator, really an interventionist who helps people really discover the hidden blocks that keep them stuck from that next level that they don't even know that they have. And the benefit or the byproduct of that is living your unique purpose. And that could be in a relationship, that could be in a business, that could be, as a parent. There's many different ways in which you could live your purpose, but that's really what I do. And I help people do that quickly. A lot of people can come to me and, we get stuff done in, a session or two that, or a retreat or two that, some people would work on for like 10 years. Mm-hmm. So it's just, it's a really awesome thing to work with people and help them get to the next level. And that's kind of what I'm about and what I do.
Yeah. I mean, you go into your journey at length in your book, which I think every single person who's looking for more grace or to find purpose should read this book, because even though you're like, oh, it's so old, or it's, from eons ago, it's got a beautiful message in there. And I think it really speaks to people who are looking to find that higher power, you know, because essentially that's really what happened. And for you and finding your purpose, because you did love your past career, like you loved working in the music industry, right? And so now you love being where you're at. How are you able to find that transition? And I know that your journey through addiction and recovery has really played a huge role. So for the people out there who are in a career or in a place in their lives where they're feeling that, you know, they're feeling stuck or they're feeling like they don't know if they'll find something else that they'll love to do, or they're feeling like stuck where they're at, what would you say helped you the most in that transition?
Do you mean from like a corporate job into starting a business? Is that what you
mean?
Or do you mean from like not having a higher power into finding my higher
power?
Well,
I mean, there's two different questions. And I guess I would want to know more of finding your higher power, right? So like finding that faith.
I mean, I feel like all of us, and I'll speak for myself, have a sense that we're guided by what or by whom or whatever is a different story. But I think we all have that sort of that sense. And I think, at least in my story, and I've seen this happen to a lot of people, is that, you know, when you lose track of that sense, that's when things go a little crazy. And when you hit that rock bottom, usually that's when you kind of come on your knees looking for answers, literally and metaphorically. You know, you're just like, dear God, I'm on my knees, I'm praying, just help me. I've never relied on you, maybe now I can.
Yeah.
And so I think that typically we find grace and our higher power through crisis, though not all the time. And there was just one day I was listening to this author, speaker, Carolyn Mace, who's amazing. And she was talking about surrendering to divine will, and I was so offended by that idea. But there was this little part of me that just said, hey, why don't you try it? See what happens. And so I said, okay, I'm a scientist. I'll try. And so I kind of said a prayer that was something like this. I said, dear God, if you're even there, I'm going to, I guess, surrender my life to you for a year. So do what you do, and if my stuff is worse in a year, then I want my life back. like you can even reason, you know what I mean, with God. Like who does that? But that was kind of how it started, and it just kind of got better and crazy from there. You know, it was definitely got harder sometimes, but it was way better because, you know, when you go on a journey, like, you know, a life-changing journey, you got to kind of get rid of certain things, and you're going to be growing, and it's not going to be easy, but it's going to be worth it. That's what I found.
Mm. Do you think that a spiritual journey requires us to be fully in, or do you think that people can kind of be half in, half out?
So how should I put this? Like there's a love affair with the law of attraction.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of this idea that like, hey, if I put it on my vision board, or if I have an intention, that's enough. But if you look at how the human being is wired, the human being is not wired for follow through. So, you know, the spiritual path and, you know, people in general, but the spiritual path for folks is littered with, you know, unkept promises to themselves and others. And mm-hmm. I think that there's this manifestation myth that says, like, if I will it, if I make a Pinterest board about it, if I put it on my vision board, drink enough kale, then I'll get it. And I just don't think that's the case. I believe in the law of attraction, but I also believe in the law of courage. I believe in the law of working your butt off. I believe in the law of adding value to other people. I believe in the law of growing and earning it. I believe in all those other laws too. So I think that, you know, what I've seen is that most people are like 98% ready. What that means is like they've made the plans. They have the Pinterest board. They have the, you know, the book, self-help bookshelf. They bought some courses. But it's still like they're getting ready to get ready. They actually haven't read it. And if they have read it, they haven't implemented it. And the self-help bookshelf, either in the real world or the digital world now, has become like the shelf of wishful thinking. And we kind of think that God is like Santa Claus, who's going to bring us these toys that we intend. And I just think that there's got to be a reassessment of all this, and like thinking like, hey, you know, you didn't create the universe. You didn't create yourself. You're a miracle. God already did all that work. Like, work your butt off. Come on, let's go. And I think there's a combination of spiritual principles and attraction and visioning, which is important. But I'm a big believer in like 1% meditation and 99% implementation.
Yeah, that's so good. It's so true.
The last thing I'd say is that like most people are not all in because they haven't had a burn the boats experience. And if you look at burn the boats, it comes from, Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill. But burning the boats basically means you got to make a decision that you can't come back from. And if you really believe, in your faith and you really believe in your higher power, then this shouldn't be an issue. Yeah. You can see what your real faith is based on your actions. So it's like maybe you trust God with your parking space, but do you trust God with your rent? Do you trust God with the love of your life? Do you trust God with these other things? The answer is in your behavior for sure.
That's so good. It's so true, because so many times we're so tenuous with our decision making. It's like, oh, here's my attempt to self-help. I bought all the books and I'm just going to sit there and stare at them and not actually take action.
Yep. It's an epidemic. It's kind of like I saw this video the other day on Facebook, like a video meme, and it was like this like song called Activewear, and it was like all these women in their activewear, and like it was a video about like all the stuff they did in their activewear except workout, It was really funny, It made me laugh.
But it's so true.
So yeah, it's kind of like wearing activewear but not working out,
right? So in saying that, there's so many people out there that they set these really bold intentions and they maybe don't implement them. What is it about the human condition in this day and age that is keeping us from creating those action steps that you're talking about? Because you're saying it and it sounds so motivating, and the work that you do with people, and you work with hundreds and thousands of people. I'm sure that you work with people where you take the time and you give them all the coaching and the advice and the meditation and this practice, and there's people that still don't do it. So where is that coming from?
Yeah, I mean, yes. Yeah, the answer is yes. yes. It's kind of like think about, like, I like to take things out of personal development and spirituality and put it in a context that other people can understand.
Okay.
In a more grounded way. I want you to imagine that you go find, like, the greatest trainer in Hollywood. Like, you go hire Gunnar Peterson, who trains The Rock, and everybody else, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you train with Gunnar 6 days a week, and you pay top dollar, and, you do your thing. But then, like, every night you go home, and you have three pizzas. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like you can do the right thing in the wrong order. And you can do the right thing while concurrently doing things that set you back. I believe that it is the job of the trainer or the coach, like someone who's in my position, to bring everything. Like when I work with my clients, like we don't hold anything back. Like I like to think that we over deliver and overshare in like our business content, in the transparency of how we run our business. Whenever, I have a session with my clients, sometimes it's supposed to be for 2 hours, ends up being 8 hours. So we really overgive and really do our best to, deliver value. At the end of the day, though, there's this thing, this Buddhist idea called karma, which is, basically like what you do. And like my karma is mine and your karma is yours. So what you do with your life will be your karma, and you will benefit or feel the pain of the consequences of your choices. And I will do that. I will also do the same thing for me. So there's a really clear line between teacher and student, or teacher and client, mentor and client.
Mm-hmm.
And so early in my career, I would take that on and I would try to like be responsible for other people's outcomes. And that was just not a very healthy dynamic. So I became very crystal clear. And it's part of our training now. It's like, hey, mm-hmm. like I ain't doing this for you. And I think it's actually really healthy because we can formulate codependent dynamics without knowing it. So
mm-hmm.
there's that. I think that the students have to know that it's on them. I think that's a really important thing to ingrain, that teachers should ingrain. Now, this shouldn't be done at the expense of not delivering value. So I don't think teachers should say, hey, it's all on you, and it's all you, and you, and I've done nothing wrong. Use it a way to hide. Or, we love criticism and feedback too. So we don't avoid that. We don't use it as a way to justify not delivering value. But I will say that just from an anatomy perspective, the human system is not designed to follow through. I think we're sort of like in between, we're in an evolving process right now. And I think the mechanism that's going to help us really be designed to follow through is algorithms, machinery, apps, and eventually merging with machine. Because if you look at, like, you know, how technology is working today, whether it's, you know, you have a subscription to something on Amazon that's a product that you use all the time, or, you know, there's a, you know, you can schedule different things these days. You know, I use an app to cut myself off from the internet and applications. It's called Freedom. It's like it's digital willpower. It's digital follow through.
Wow.
So the brain, if you look at how we're designed, pretty much we have this, like, this monkey mind, the limbic system, that's essentially all fight or flight, right? It's either on or off. You're either in threat or you got to run, right? And so when you're in that place, that's stress, that's fear, and that part of our brain is designed to respond to in-the-moment threats. So, you know, is that tiger looking hungry and coming my direction? Is there, you know, is it, how do I get out of this room if there's a fire? You know, stuff like that. So, like, we need that part of our mind and brain to exist so that we can become aware of threat. Mm-hmm. The problem is the other part of our brain, that sort of that neocortex, that prefrontal part, that's really, you know, sort of more, it's newer, it's more evolved in the limbic system. That part of the mind is really great at coming up with concepts and intentions and ideas. Like, the mind is designed to be creative, a creative engine that comes up with ideas. And that's part of what has given us, besides our thumbs, right? That's part of what has given human beings, like, this incredible competitive advantage to be, like, the dominant species on the planet. The problem is we have good intentions, but we default to responding to in-the-moment threats. So we don't have a proper mechanism in our design to follow through and remember what might be important for us to remember, because we're so busy responding. And in-the-moment threat could be a phone call, a text message. It could be traffic. It could be the news. It could be a notification. There's so many other distractions that are coming in. So it's really about what we teach people is how to use that survival mind to actually follow through whether you want to or feel like it or not.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So actually what has to happen is it has to become a threat not to follow through on your good intentions. Mm. And when you can make your good intentions squeak and feel dangerous, that's a really good thing. And it's counter to a lot of sort of popular pseudoscience spirituality that kind of says, you know, thinking about it is enough, because it's not. We have to act. But the thing is, our body and our brain is primarily designed to respond to threat. So, for example, I was late on a project a month ago, and I said, I have not followed through on this project. I have to get it done. So I said, if I don't get this project done by Friday, then I'm going to donate $1,000 to Donald Trump's campaign. And my entire staff knew about it. My girlfriend knew about it. Everyone knew about it. My girlfriend's parents knew about it. And they were all on my ass to get this thing done. And so was I. So it became sort of a necessity to follow through versus just something that we maybe wish for one day. So when, you know, when your back is against the wall and you got to come up with a resource or an mm-hmm. answer, you'll yeah. find a way. It's just most of us, for the most part, are, you know, comfortable, and so we don't move. But the idea is it should make you go, oh, my God, I got to get this done.
Right.
You know, and there's a lot of different follow-through techniques. I also am a big believer that people are so into mindset, and I think mindset is vital. I think you have to protect your confidence, and you have to protect your mindset, and you got to consistently fill your mind with the right information and positive, uplifting information.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think your environment is important. You know, there's this phrase that, like, you know, you mold your environment, and then your environment molds you. So if you're in an environment of people who are lower achievers, who are blaming people for why they aren't where they want to be, or if you're in an environment of negativity or people who don't believe in your dreams, or people who have never started a business, or people who are not on the same wavelength as you spiritually, well, that's going to have an impact on you. So it's mm-hmm. a combination of both that really helps us follow through. One is you got to be in a growth environment where there's other people who are kicking butt too.
Yeah.
And the other thing is you have to really have a growth mindset. It's not just one or the other. People think that they can will themselves to change, and that's just not how we're designed.
Mm, no, I totally agree. You know, one of my teacher, Yoga Rupa, Rod Stryker, always says that it's the same thing that you're saying, you know, about wanting something or having an intention that's so bold and so compelling that it keeps you and fuels you towards it more than it does keep you focused on your past, right? So it's like...
Yep.
Having that drive or that tenacity to move forward. So one of the things I want to ask you about in particular is this, you know, removing toxic people out of your life, because I think that's so important and it stifles our growth so much and we don't even realize it sometimes. How do we begin to identify that we're in an environment that's keeping us exactly where we're at. Can you give us a couple of, you know, characteristics?
Sure. I think it's a really simple question. Over the last 6 months, has this person, situation, environment brought me energy or drained my energy? I think that's probably the best question that you can ask yourself. And if the answer is it's drained my energy, then the next question is, okay, well, how have I participated in that? How have I allowed this? And the answer might be, well, because, you know, I need to work on myself, because not every relationship where there's negativity is like, it's not like you're the good one and they're the bad one. Like, mm-hmm. usually in every relationship, there's some give and take and some equal truths on both sides. So you might want to look at your side of the track. And if your side of the track is clean, well, it might be time to look at exiting the relationship and certainly exiting the current dynamic of the relationship. If your side of the track is not clean, then before you leave a relationship, you need to do your work and clean up your side of the track, because it's not like, oh my God, you're so negative, I have to leave you alone. But it's like, okay, well, if you've been contributing to that, chances are you'll find someone else who'll be just as negative. You know, it'll be like a lateral move.
Right.
So I think it's important to, you know, look at your 100% of your 50%.
Mm. Oh, it's so good. How does this apply to teachers, yoga teachers, or spiritual teachers like yourself? How does this apply to people that you work with?
Well, I think that, if I understand you correctly, you know, teachers have a responsibility to be an authority in the room, but also, realize that they're not perfect. And if, you know, a client or someone triggers you, well, there's work there for you too. So it's not like the client is wrong and you're right as a teacher. With that said, I think there should definitely be like a we don't want transference where there's, you can't tell if I'm your teacher or your friend. Like, there needs to be a really crystal clear, you know, mentor, you know, client relationship. Right. But I think, you know, I learn best from my clients, and I learn in front of them out loud. They know that I'm imperfect, and it makes things a lot better. But I think that it's a dedication to consistently learning is a very important process, and recognizing that you're not always right.
Right. Yeah, I think that's huge.
Now, and one of the things I find to be personally interesting about the yoga space is that, you know, yoga is a modality that teaches, you know, flexibility. It teaches, you know, higher consciousness. It teaches, you know, a certain philosophy. And I find it, you know, I find it very interesting that, you know, there's a lot of yoga teachers who think that, you know, just doing an asana or just doing yoga is enough, when it's really like the underlying emotion is there. Mm-hmm. And I think that there needs to be, like, there's that archetypal passive aggressive yoga teacher.
Absolutely.
Who's like really pissed off that you're not doing it in the right way at the right time and the right angle, when asana means comfortable pose. That's exactly what it means. And, you know, so I just think there needs to be a level of, you know, compassion. And, you know, a lot of people come to yoga because there's trauma. But I think that you got to feel your feelings. You got to give yourself a break. You got to give your students a break and make it an enjoyable class, not something that inflict this masochistic pain onto your clients or students, you know?
Right. Right. I think it's something so huge, especially now with the popularization of yoga as just the physical form, right? We can sometimes begin to lose the connection or the magic that actually happens on the mat, and utilize it as a form of connecting to all of those things, you know, and what you're saying, like fully feeling your feelings and feeling where you're at. But it also doesn't mean that you're perfect, and it also doesn't mean that the person teaching you is perfect. I think it's all, you know, just I call it a laboratory of exploration, you know, on and off the mat. So,
yeah, for sure. Well, I mean, you know, for God's sake, I mean, there have been so many examples of yoga teachers who have fallen from grace in the last, you know, 5 or 10 years. Right. And I just think it's like the deification of a yoga teacher to me is just sort of like weird. You know, when you look at like where that came from out of the Indian tradition, like, these are people who are like from a saintly perspective, but like being able to, like, you know anatomy and do yoga doesn't make you a spiritual teacher. What makes you a spiritual teacher is, you know, how you're being in the world. And I think that the deification of anybody is sort of a bad idea. But, you know, when you think about yoga, there's 8 limbs of yoga.
Yeah.
Right? And, like, one of them is the physical practice of, you know, of asana.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of other ones. And the deeper issue, the deeper purpose of yoga is, like, oneness or samadhi, where everything is home, where, like, you're connected to that higher power. So
right.
I think that there's just a, I think it's like, guys, like, don't deify your gym teacher who can be flexible. You know, it's like, don't do that. And if someone's a spiritual teacher, you know, then be very responsible in how you, you know, draw the line with your students and how you're able to, you know, have boundaries and, you know, be real. I think people who are the best teachers are the ones who are willing to make mistakes in public.
Yeah,
for sure.
I agree with that 100%. I think it's something, I think especially now it's something that needs to be addressed, because we begin to hold some of these teachers in high standard. And I see it so much, Mastin. I see so many teachers out there, like, who teach these beautiful things, but out in the world, you know, they're out, like, you know, doing drugs with their students, or, like, going out and, like,
crazy.
Do you know what I'm saying?
I've never heard,
like,
that, but that's crazy.
Oh yeah. No, it's real. The struggle is real, my friend.
Yeah. I think the bottom line is, like, with anybody, whether it's, like, you know, a yoga teacher, someone that does what I do, a politician, an actor, a famous person, whatever.
Yeah.
Like, don't believe the billboard. And notice how you feel in their presence. Like, do you feel safe?
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel seen, and are they humble or not? Do you feel like you can approach them? And take what resonates and leave the rest. Because the other thing is you don't want to, like, miss the message because of the messenger. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally.
Like, you want to still, like, learn, and everybody has something really meaningful to say. So you want to make sure that you can kind of take the good and leave the rest.
Mm. Yeah, that's so good. Thank you for sharing that. What are you working on currently in your life that you're most excited about?
I'm most excited about having a live stream studio. It's been something I've wanted for a while. And we finally got all the pieces. And so we're doing, like, so many more trainings, webinars, you name it. Like, we have so many things that we're doing now. And not only is some of it, like, recorded, but a lot of it's live, and it's just really upped our ability to produce really quality content. And I think it's fantastic. I feel like my creativity is, like, going to a whole nother level.
Wow. That's so exciting. That's so much fun. Wow.
Yeah, it is.
Yay. And I know that you were just in Bali not that long ago, right?
That's right. Yep.
And you were on a retreat, or you were leading or doing a workshop?
Yeah, I do retreats all over the world. Sometimes it's in Bali. And, you know, we did a writer's retreat for 28 days where you write your book in 28 days, the first draft. And then we had a 2-week retreat all about, like, removing those hidden blocks to your purpose, helping you figure out your purpose, working on relationships, love, passion, romance, goal setting, purpose-driven goal setting, all that type of stuff. Plus, we use Bali as our seminar room, so we use the island as a seminar as well.
Oh, I love it. I've been, for the last 2 years, spent a month both times. Last year, 1 month, and it was the most visceral, like, intense experience of my life. I learned so much. I got the most sick that I've ever been in my entire life.
Oh, yeah, it happened.
Yeah, and then this year when I went, it was, like, completely magical.
Don't go without Cipro.
You what? Don't go.
I said, never go to Bali without Cipro and Imodium.
Yeah, well, should have known that. Like, nobody warned me.
That happened to me the first time I went too.
It did? Oh, man, it's intense. And, like, in a foreign country, you don't know anyone. It's just, like, it's so intense. But I'm glad I did. And I know that you've been going for the last couple of years. So it's great.
Yep.
So I kind of want to go back to one of the questions I asked a little while ago about the, you know, spiritual path. And then the question was, for the people that do have a desk job that want to transition out of their current job and want to maybe explore a new avenue or go into business for themselves. I know that you do a lot of work around this. And so I get a lot of questions for people that listen to this podcast about how to get unstuck or how to make a really big decision and what to look for, right? So can you give us any advice or tips on how to do that?
Sure. I think, you know, I work a lot with people who have like that sort of like mythical 6 month plan where like 6 months from now they'll leave their job, and then 6 months comes by and they realize they didn't do it. They push out 6 months more and they do it like 10 times in a row. And actually, you know, like 5 years has gone by. You know, that's that 98% ready.
Right.
Where you're just like 98% ready to go. But you haven't gone. And I would just say a couple things. I would say that, you know, anyone who's paying attention to technology, the marketplace, how things are evolving right now, it's very obvious that we are in an exponential environment where things are being created faster and faster and faster and faster and faster, and so many industries are being disrupted. I saw a statistic recently that says that about 50% of the jobs that exist today will be obsolete by 2025, which is not that far away. Mm. And you just think about, you know, 3D printing and how, like, pretty soon even Uber drivers aren't going to have a job because, like, we'll have automatic cars. So, you know, when you look at, like, all this disruptive technology, a lot of industries are being shaken up right now. So a lot of people are either getting reduced in pay or are really nervous about their market being disrupted. And I know this, like, firsthand because I was part of a business that got disrupted first by the internet called the music business. So I know what that's like when a non-music company dominates a music business called Apple with iTunes, which was just, you know, complete disruption. So I know what that feels like. So if you're feeling the desire to leave, chances are you're probably feeling what's happening in the world today. And you gotta stop giving yourself a 6 month plan. You are lying to yourself if you have a 6 month plan. Think about the person that you love most. And then imagine there was a gun to their head and you had to leave your job and replace your income within 3 months. What would you do? And if you didn't do it, they were gone. Like, you would probably find a way to do it in like a week or two. And so it's really about, because we're not going to do that. It's really a graphic example because that's not what we're going to do.
It's a great visualization.
It's important, you know, but it's like you got to make it a decision that you can't come back from. Like, give notice. Give your freaking notice. Like, give 3 months notice. Create a transition plan. Be willing to train people. Like, be the best employee they ever had leave. You know, set them up to win.
Yeah.
But if you give notice and it's real, your nervous system's gonna go, oh my freaking God, we gotta get in gear. Let's go. You know, something like that where it's a burn the boats decision. That's how you right. do it. There's no like, I'll build my business up and have a great level income and then transition smoothly with no hiccups. Like, forget about it.
Mm.
Burn the freaking boats. And, you know, build the thing as you go. Like, that's what being an entrepreneur is all about. So, and also I would say that it's about failing fast and learning. People who are you know, perfectionists and they procrastinate. And so, you know, in this new economy, in the way that we're moving digitally, people who fail the fastest and learn the fastest and learn from those mistakes the fastest about themselves and how to deliver most value to their clients and their customers, those are the people who are going to win. So, you know, you gotta basically just rip off the Band-Aid. There's no other way to do it.
Oh, that's so intense. Like, that's so intense.
Yeah, but it's like we can either talk about some advice that'll make you feel comfortable and I'll right. lie to you and you'll feel all good for a moment, but you'll be stuck in your job, or we can have a real conversation about how to actually do it, you know?
Yeah. No, you're totally right. So I want to transition a little bit and talk about health. So you are a dedicated fitness enthusiast with your early morning cardio workouts, correct?
Yes.
So why is having a routine so important and why does it matter?
Well, I mean, if you think about your life, this is a great question. Your life is basically a series of routines.
Okay.
So your routines like are your life essentially. So you got to think of it that way. Now, as far as exercise, I think that if you look at anyone who's successful, they have an exercise routine. I'm not a natural exerciser. You know, I was a guy that was like, growing up, I was like, I hate the gym. Like, I really just detest the gym, and kale can kiss my ass as far as I'm concerned. That's kind of like my attitude. And I was healthy, you know, like I was in great shape, especially in high school. Like I was an all-star athlete and stuff like that. Then I did drugs in my early 20s, and that kind of messed up my internal, you know, systems for a while.
Yeah.
And then I couch surfed for a while, and that was, I got very lean because I didn't have any food. And then, you know, came the success and like 7 years of traveling and stuff like that. And, you know, I don't know how long it's been, but, you know, I started getting some health issues and I started getting taking my health pretty seriously. I've invested probably about, I don't know, $200,000 in the last 24 months in different nutritionists, trainers, training, doctors, tests, et cetera, to really understand my health because there's so much confusion. And I ended up diagnosing myself with prediabetes because I take my lipid profile, which is my cholesterol reading and my glucose reading every single day. And I was looking at the numbers and I said, these are prediabetic. And I took it to my doctor and he concurred. And that was a really scary moment. It was kind of a wake up call. It was like, hey kid, like you gotta like get your stuff together. And I'd already been kind of working out and trying to make it happen. But I was just, you know, a year in, like not getting a lot of results. And, you know, I was the person that could like literally do everything, but not lose weight. And now I understood why, the hormone called insulin. So for me, I'm sort of in a consistent, I won't say battle, but I would say dance with insulin and insulin resistance and weight loss. And the more that I can get my insulin levels in check, the better. And they're pretty good right now. And I've also noticed that as a byproduct, there's certain ways that if I eat a certain way, if I exercise a certain way, I have more energy, and if I have more energy, I can pour that into my business. And so there's also like this really great, you know, associated professional upside. And I also have more energy for my relationship. So it's like there's like this net positive effect where, you know, before maybe I was like kind of like hooked, if you will, or craved, you know, sweet food or whatever it might be. Now I crave exercise and I crave, you know, eating well. Not because I have fantastic willpower, but because my nervous system has linked like really great reward to it. And I think that's a really powerful trick or tool that I learned, which is like most people who are like healthy don't have to use willpower to go to the gym because they crave it. And so you got to get to a place where you actually crave it. And then it can kind of be automatic and it takes some time, but I think it's completely worth it.
So in your recent sort of assessment of your current state of health, now it's probably propelled you to continue to grow and continue to keep your routine on keeping you on track, right? So has there been a time, well, maybe even in your past, where you've fallen off track or fallen off the wagon?
10 minutes ago? I don't know. I think there's a... It's never like a straight line to success. It's a bunch of zigging and zagging.
Okay.
You know, we call it tacking, you know, or like you think about like an airplane, doesn't go from point A to point B perfectly. They're going left and right and up and down, consistently adjusting.
Right.
So I think that there's going to always be adjustments. And yes, I fall off track all the time. And I think that it's not so much about not falling off of track as it is like having faster repair tools. Because like when you fall off track, like you could fall off track for 6 months, 6 years, or 6 days, or 6 hours, or 6 minutes, you know? So it's like, you know, for me, it's not about falling off track. It's like, how fast can I bounce back and get back into the zone? Because I don't anticipate that I'm so perfect that I'm going to never fall off track. I'm going to be really compassionate to myself when I do and, you know, make sure that I have habits in place to kind of get me back on track.
Mm-hmm.
And that gets back to, you know, like your environment. You know, I live in a sugar-free home. Like there ain't no sugar in my house. We got blueberries and bananas and that's it. You know, so like that's a important sort of just main choice that we have. So that, you know, if I do decide to kind of have a day, like it takes time. I have to drive into town. It takes 15 minutes. It's a pain in the ass. Like it's not easy to do.
You have to really be committed to that.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So it's also setting up your environment so that, you know, it's healthy. So if you've got a bunch of treats laying around, like, get it out of there, you know, like, knock it off. And I also really advise people, I mean, think about how much money people spend on drinks on a weekend or like for a month or a year or shoes or whatever. I think everyone should spend $300, $500, go on Craigslist, get a used Precor machine or a used treadmill and just have it and wake up and do like 30 minutes to an hour of easy steady state cardio in the morning on an empty stomach. It's a great way to wake up and get your blood flowing, and then do 3 minutes of jumping up and down on a rebounder to get your lymph system going. It's a fantastic start to the morning.
Yeah, I think, yes, thank you for sharing that. I think it's important for people to know also that, like, we're all human and we all have those moments of, you know, wanting something or like desiring a treat or like something happens and it's like, it's okay to do that, but it's not okay for you to really beat yourself up about it afterwards. Or if it's something that you're trying to cut out completely and be like, oh, it's okay, I can have a little bit of sugar. It's like, no, look, I'm a sugar addict too, Mastin, so I can totally, totally relate, right? So we're on the same exact boat. This is a sugar-free house. Like,
yeah.
And I just had my little 18-year-old sister move in 2 months ago, and it's like, no sugar in the house for her. She's like, what did I ever do to you? You know, it's like, so, you know, I feel bad, and I see it kind of creeping into the house with the, you know, like little treats and things that she gets, and I'm just like, ugh! I'm like, just sitting there, and I'm like, okay, well, you know what? This is a choice, and I feel so much better not having it, and it, I don't even think about it anymore, you know, but it took a while for me to get to that point. And I think to speak back to your point, to what you're saying, is that it's not a straight line, and, you know, it does take a little bit of time. You know, things don't happen overnight. I think that that's why diets fail, don't you? Because everything is like, oh, here, 30 days, like, it's gone. Like, lose weight in 2 weeks, or in 7 days, lose 60 pounds. And it's like,
yeah,
all these things, it doesn't, it's a process. Like, it doesn't just happen overnight. Yeah. Right?
Yeah. Well, it's true. I mean, I have such a love-hate relationship with the fitness industry. And for a long time, I was like, you know, screw the fitness industry. You know, everyone has, like, their thing, and everyone's trying to just sell me, like, a program, because I was so disenfranchised with, like, my results.
Mm-hmm.
And what I realized was, actually, in my research, whenever I have a problem and I know that I have a problem, like, when you know you have a problem, it's a great moment, because then you know, like, what to do to solve it, you know? So I always find the best people. So, like, I found the best people who knew about this topic of called insulin resistance and weight loss. And so it was a real conscious choice to find these people. And what I found was, is that, you know, let's look at, like, the calorie restriction camp, right? Like, you do need to eat less calories than you burn to lose weight. There is a level of that, of truth there. However, let's go look at, like, the paleo camp, right? So it's like, and, you know, blood sugar has a lot to do with it. So if you're taking in tons of carbs, you know, well, that's gonna mess up your blood sugar levels. But then let's go look at, like, the training side, and, like, look at high performers, mm-hmm. whether it's a bodybuilder or an athlete. And it's like, well, hold on a second, I can't go ketogenic, because if I go ketogenic, I'm not gonna have any glucose or ATP. I'm gonna pass out. Right. So it's not like I can just, like, eat, like, you know, bacon and butter all day long and be a high performer. You know, that's not really how, because, and by the way, people who are like, oh, you could burn on ketones. It's like, yeah, ketones are your body's last resort before death and how to utilize energy with the body. Right. So it's like, that's not really something to be proud of long term. By the way, if you smell someone's breath who's on the ketogenic diet, like, please. But there is truth in intermittent fasting, like, and there's a lot of truth in that as well. Then let's look at the vegans.
Yeah.
Right. Well, first of all, don't tell me you're a vegan if you eat Trader Joe's vegan cookies. Like, you're not a freaking vegan, right? No way. Like, traditional vegan is all about, you know, anti-inflammatory foods and foods that don't produce, you know, inflammation and stuff like that. And you look at, like, that world, it's like, yes, there needs to be a reduction of inflammation. The thing is, you have to look at it as a holistic approach. You know, the thing about functional medicine is that functional medicine looks at the body as a whole versus trying to diagnose a part of it. Well, I think that the fitness industry needs a shift in perspective to understand that, well, actually, hold on a second. Every one of you is onto a piece of the truth, but it's kind of like we got to combine everything together into one holistic model that includes, anti-inflammatory foods. It includes specific calorie restrictions, but, like, not going crazy. It includes understanding that, you know, there's a proper use of carbohydrates for fitness and performance. And depending on when you have them, you know, you will either gain weight, gain fat or not. There's a certain level of intermittent fasting that's necessary to lower blood sugar levels, but it's not the best way to be long-term because it alters performance issues. And there's also the hormone level of, like, hey, the master hormone in the body that controls fat loss is insulin. You know, insulin regulates ghrelin and leptin and the hunger hormone and all that type of stuff. So, you know, and when there's elevated insulin, there's also elevated cortisol. If there's elevated cortisol, then cortisol pulls blood sugar and just keeps the blood sugar ready because, you know, you're in that fight or flight state where you got to move. But if your insulin's too high, then you just store the blood sugar as fat. So there's also the stress component of, like, you know, calm the heck down, you know. And there's also the sleep component. And then there's also the hydration component.
Ugh.
So it's like there's a and then there's also the, you know, the gut component of, like, how is your microbiome and how's your brain, you know, how's your brain health. So weight loss is a imbalance in the body that has lots of different elements to it. And you don't also just look at weight loss, but it's like long-term weight loss, because do you lose the weight and then gain it right back?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's a hormone. Your insulin levels and your hormones are like a thermostat. And so you can go up a little or down a little, but if you have a hard time busting through, you have a hormone imbalance and your body has leveled off hormonally to whatever weight you're at. So, like, there's a lot that goes into weight loss beyond just, like, you know, exercising and eating, you know, greens or something.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's like there's a lot that goes into it. So I think that, like, every person out there has a slice of the truth. And part of what I'm committed to doing in, like, my next book, not Proclaim the Power book, but then my third book, is, you know, having a conversation about, like, a holistic approach to health, because there's lots of different things you got to look at, not just one marker.
Oh,
if that makes any sense.
Yeah, totally, 100%. I mean, you know, I'm a nutritionist and do holistic health. I mean, it's everything that you're saying is exactly right. There's so many components. There's also the mental and emotional and, you know, all of those things. I mean, everything, like, it all matters and it all plays a role. And it's, you know, it's that idea that it's the bio-individuality, right? It's like one person's food is another person's poison. So thank you for sharing that.
Right.
And I can't wait to read that book. I think it's something that...
I know, I can't wait to write it.
I mean, it, like, literally, like, now we're all just going to be, like, twiddling our thumbs waiting for you to do it. So one of the things I want to talk to you about, and I want to be respectful of your time here, so I only have a couple more questions. Why do you think it's important for us to do things that make us feel uncomfortable?
That's a good question. It's a simple but profound answer.
Yeah.
What makes human beings happy is growth and contributing to something larger than ourselves. In order to grow, you have to take risks. And taking risks is uncomfortable because you're stepping in the unknown. So in order to grow, be happy, you have to grow. In order to grow, you have to take risks. In order to take risks, you have to be uncomfortable.
It's so scary, isn't it? Sometimes it's so scary to, like, even say it, because I'm like, oh, it's just... But you're right. I mean, those are the moments when we push through that resistance, when we explore a new, you know, landscape. You know, we can really push from that. So thank you for sharing that. Why do you think that people make the same mistakes?
At least 51% of them, likes where they are, likes making that mistake. There's a payoff or a reward for making that mistake over and over and over again that keeps them safe.
Like a brain response or like an addiction type of quality?
I would call it, the term I use is called survival pattern. Survival pattern is an unconscious and irrational fear based on past trauma that prevents you from moving forward.
Oh, I see.
So it's usually a fear that you don't know that you have that's keeping you stuck for reasons that you aren't exactly sure of. if that makes any sense. So
yeah.
So that's why, you know, working with, like, an interventionist or a coach or something like that is really important, because you know, we can help identify those patterns quickly and help you move beyond them. A lot of people don't know why they do what they do. So it takes usually an outside lens to do that, because we all have blind spots.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you for that. This is about radical transformation. So to see far, we have to be willing to first look close, right? So in what area of your life have you chosen to look closer?
I think I'd have to say my health, for sure.
Mm.
Um, For sure. It would be health. Really looking closer at my metabolism, looking closer at what, I put in my body, the effects that it has, like all that type of stuff, like my biochemistry for sure has been my my number one focus.
Mm. What area in your life do you feel the most free?
The most free?
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like, I want to give a valuable answer. I've never felt more free. I feel like, and I think when you get one area improves, every other area improves too. I would say that, we recently set up this live stream studio. So in this moment, I'm feeling particularly free in my creativity, which is really exciting. But that makes everything else better too. But, being creative is a big deal. And so I feel like I can do a lot more than I used to be able to do, which is super awesome.
Oh, I love that. That's so good. What has been the biggest lesson in your life, and who's taught you the biggest lesson, if it's a person? It's like I saved the big, deep questions for the end. Sorry.
Yeah. The most important lesson. My goodness. I would say the most important lesson I've had to learn, and the lesson I learned consistently, is to always follow your intuition. Mm. Like, even when it seems crazy or irrational, to like really be there. And I think that there have been a lot of relationships I've had, business partnerships, friendships, whatever,
yeah,
ended in a way that, I would not have preferred earlier in my life. And a lot of that came from not following my intuition and not listening sooner. I think there's a lot of pain that comes from not following your intuition. And so, how should I put this? Pretty much all major lessons in life come back to that one lesson.
Mm. Okay. Okay. What are some words of wisdom that you live by?
That I live by?
Yeah.
Can I cuss on this?
Of course, 100%.
Okay, cool. Yeah, so my clients and I all have this sort of like this phrase that we use that I think is also like the best attitude in the world. So like when you ask yourself, like, what should I do? How do I do this? I don't know what to do. Like if you're ever in that place, it's a great piece of advice. Also, it's just a great piece of advice in general. And it's just this, fuck it. Should I start my business? Fuck it. Right?
Right.
Should I go to Bali? Fuck it. That's kind of how we look at things. And literally the clients who are most successful have that attitude of just like, I'm going to do it. Just going to do it.
I love that. So, that's so appropriate. We'll start a new hashtag. Hashtag fuck it. Great. that's amazing. So I'm going to get ready to ask you the final question. So part of this podcast and what I do is this whole idea that, we are all connected. We are all supported by universe source or God of your understanding or, Mother Nature or whatever your higher power is, right? So it's this idea that we are all radically loved. We're all radically supported by everything around us. The universe conspires for us. So the question is, how do you feel radically loved, and what do you radically love?
That's a great question. I think, that's so deep. I'm trying to come up with an answer. I think for me, feeling radically loved is like when I'm around people who are excited. Mm. And not just excited, but people who are like who are excited to be innovative and to grow and to, implement and to, really do things. Like they're really doing stuff. I love that energy. It's really infectious. And then what do I radically love? I mean, I radically love Jenna, mm-hmm. my girl. I love our clients. I love my purpose, myself, my family. I'm very grateful for my higher power. There's so many things, but if I had to choose one thing, it would be my girl.
Aww, that's so romantic.
She's Well, it's true. I mean, she literally, like, my life would absolutely be worse off without her.
Mm. That's so great, Mastin. Thank you so much for everything that you do in the world, all the light that you bring, and for this purpose that you have to bring love and radical transformation and fulfillment to every single person that comes into contact with you.
You got it. Well, thank you for having me. It's been a real pleasure to be here today. It's been a great, great conversation.
Where can we find more information about you and what you're doing, or any future retreats or trainings or coaching doing?
Sure. Everything is over at Mastin, M-A-S-T-I-N, KIPP, KIPP.com. And right now, let's see, I'm kind of laying low. I mean, I think the big news is September 12th, 2017, my book, Claim Your Power, comes out, okay, which is all about how to find your purpose. Finding your unique purpose. Also, we talk about how to discover these hidden blocks that are preventing you from going to that next level, the combination of those two things. So if you feel stuck, not sure why, and you want to live your purpose, like, that's really what the book is all about. So super excited about that.
Oh, that's really exciting. Maybe we'll have you back on and you can tell us all about it.
Awesome.
Yay.
You got it.
Thank you, Mastin.
So much. It's been a great conversation today.
Thank you. Hey everyone, thanks for listening. For more information, visit www.radicallylove.com/podcast. To read all about today's guests or past guests, you can click on any of the links, or for more information, you can always follow me on Instagram at Rosie Acosta or Twitter at Rosie Acosta, and let us know what you thought.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.